Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to another episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski, and everything sucks. Even when things are good, they suck. I mean, I'm not asking for perfection here, guys. I want more of the show to be good than is bad. I'll let you know when that happens. predictably, everything that Roman and Jay did, with the addition now of KO to the storyline, everything they did was awesome. We also got a surprise little fun, great storytelling in-ring match from Sami Zayn and Daniel Bryan. Not surprising that they would be good, but surprising that I didn't realize we were going to get that match. That was also great. Everything else on the show ranged from pretty bad to abjectly awful. So, guys, you can't one storyline being great and then throw a good match in there is not enough to make a good SmackDown. It's just not. So, in case you're looking for recaps of the SmackDown side of Survivor Series, I did that on the Tuesday episode of Sour Graps. In case you missed one. So, start out with Jey Uso down, and he's going to introduce Roman, because he's talking about how Drew McIntyre beat Randy Orton, and he beat Brock Lesnar, and he beat the Big Show that one time. also, you know, Seth Rollins and Dolph Ziggler twice, and Bobby Lashley. It hasn't been a murderer's row for old Drew. I mean, Randy, sure, and you know, Dolph, no. Bobby Lashley, well managed by Lana, no. Seth Rollins, I'm gonna say no, because the Messiah gimmick was ass. So no, Big Show, no. So everything since he's been, Drew McIntyre beat all those amazing guys, but he couldn't beat my cousin. Here he is, Roman Reigns. And Roman Reigns comes out and is like, stop celebrating. Because, as we all know, because we all watched it, Jey Uso was the last man eliminated from the Team SmackDown and got cleanly swept by Team Raw. And then Roman says, get the hell out of my arena. But Jey didn't get the hell out of his arena. Jey stayed or stuck around. And then he came down and he super kicked Drew right after Roman had a dick punch to Drew. So you might say the super kick was kind of superfluous. But anyway, after the thing, it was like, Jey was so concerned about having disappointed Roman when Roman says, get the hell out, that Jey stuck around and helped Roman win the match. I would have much rather, if you had to choose one or the other to get taken out of the end of that finish, either no dick punch or no super kick by Jey, I definitely would have kept the super kick by Jey. I don't need the dick punch. Roman should never win another match via dick punch. He doesn't need to. He shouldn't have to. He's fucking Roman Reigns, the most powerful we've ever seen him. Don't need to do it. I would have much rather had it been that. And the gesture at the end of the show, end of that match, because they still did the whole fucking 45-minute Undertaker tribute, where let's introduce 15 people to stand in the ring and then they're not necessary. They can leave. I went into fucking detail about that on Tuesday. The last thing of the Roman match that we saw was Roman and Jey up on the top of the ramp and Roman hesitating, but bringing Jey in for the one-armed hug. And that was great. It was a wonderful little coda to this chapter of their relationship. You know, how how Jay, he had to join forces with Roman. Otherwise, they were going to kick him out of the family. And he didn't want to do that, but he felt like he had to. He was backed into a corner. And no matter what he did, he always earned the ire of his cousin. His cousin would always get in his face about stuff and you know, talk down to him, talk shit to him, be pissy at him. But finally, he had finally done the thing that will allow Roman to show him some affection, to bring him in and be a part of the family. And that motion by Roman, after keeping him at arm's length, after pushing him away and pushing him away and pushing him away, finally bringing him in for the hug, that sealed the deal. That moment sealed the deal for Jay. Jay was now all in, because the only thing he wanted was acceptance from his cousin Roman, and he finally got it. He finally got that acceptance, that love, that affection, and now he's all in. So there's certainly no need to repeat that chapter again, because we just saw the ending of it. Whoops. Sorry, I forgot this is WWE, and you can't do a chapter of a story less than two or three times. Mostly four or five times. But less than is never once. Not ever once. So sometimes they'll skip a chapter if the pay-per-view build is too short. They'll just skip a chapter. So they might do a chapter zero times, but they'll never, ever do a chapter once. It's either multiple times or no times. And this is a multiple times time. This is a multiple times time. Jay gets belittled by Roman about how did I ask you to come down and help me out with Drew? No, I didn't. Blah, blah, blah. I told you to get the hell out and take your brother with you and go away. And he didn't listen. And it's the same thing. Do you don't respect me? Do I look like some little bitch in the locker room begging for leftovers from Thanksgiving dinner? No, I got a bone to pick with you, Roman. I got a bone to pick with you. In my humble opinion, in this reviewer's humble opinion, the leftovers are the best part, man. Like, to me, like, I don't know about anybody else, but I'm not a huge fan of Thanksgiving dinner, like stuffing. Listen, you cooked a bunch of bread in a bird's anal cavity, and you want me to eat it? No, I don't need, no. Especially Aunt Susan, the raisins? No, I'm not touching your anal cavity bread. I'm not doing that. Mashed potatoes, they gotta be just right. If they're not just right, then I'm sorry. What are your other major sides or whatever? Listen, the big thing is the bird, right? It's the turkey. It's the gobbledygooker. The main thing is the turkey. And the turkey is always dry. I mean, I have yet to be invited to a Thanksgiving dinner where somebody brines the turkey and gets it all nice and juicy. Maybe does the deep fry thing and they don't burn down their house. Something good to seal in all that flavor. Never happens. It's always dry. It's always overcooked. But the day after, somehow, you get that turkey breast. It's been nicely shaved off the sides. And you get that nice and thick. You put it between two slices of bread with some bacon, a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper, mustard, mayo, lettuce, tomato. Sourdough bread. I'm a sourdough guy. The leftovers from Thanksgiving dinner. Lunch the day after, lunch on Black Friday, lunch on Saturday, lunch on Sunday, depending on how big a bird you are. You got turkey sandwiches for the next solid week. Real turkey. Not this shit you get from Oscar Mayer. No. Not in your grocer's, you know, deli meat case. No, real fucking turkey off the bird. A cold turkey sandwich. It's the best lunch. Gotta have the bacon. Gotta have the lettuce. Gotta have the tomato. It's a BLT with turkey. I'm a sourdough guy. Don't disparage Thanksgiving leftovers, Roman. That's all I'm saying. I mean, you're missing out on the best part here. I mean, sweet potatoes, sure, but I like my marshmallows roasted over an open fire. It should not be a surprise to anyone that I am a nitpicker about everything, even food. I know that's impossible to believe because look at me. I look like I've never turned down a meal in my life. However, Thanksgiving, not my favorite. Not my favorite Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving leftovers there. Anyway, he repeats the whole, do I look like a bitch who loves Thanksgiving, who hates Thanksgiving, what, Thanksgiving leftovers, blah, blah, blah. No, you don't look like a bitch, Roman. But he talks about today about they don't respect you. That's why they lost. That's why they all got pinned. That's why Seth Rollins, who it should be known and should be noted, did not appear on last night's episode of SmackDown. So it looks like he has vacated the premises to go on paternity leave. And good for him. But committing wrestling suicide by going down on two knees and allowing himself to be brogue kicked into oblivion isn't the best way to go on paternity leave, because it doesn't wrap up anything and it doesn't start anything new. Because are we starting a feud with Sheamus when he gets back? I mean, no, probably not, right? Anyway. The reason that Seth did that was because he didn't respect Jey Uso enough, because they don't fear Jey Uso enough. So he does the whole "I'm not angry, I'm disappointed" voice through the entire thing, and you can tell it's really breaking Jey, because Jey thought he had won. Jey thought he had gotten the approval that he needed from Roman. I mean, yeah, the SmackDown team lost, but he was the last guy standing, and he almost got a pinfall, kind of, sort of. If it wasn't 1-on-5, he might have. But he helped Roman beat Drew. So, and then Roman gave him a hug. You're sending a lot of mixed messages, Roman. Give the guy a hug and then tell him he failed you. That's not very nice. So Jey thought that chapter was over, but then he was like, no, we got to do this again, huh? Okay. What they're doing with this chapter, the redux of this chapter, is good. But they never know how to end a chapter. I hope this is the last time they do the chapter, and I hope there's a second another chapter that happens next week with the Uso storyline, and I will pitch it to you at the end of the show. So Roman leaves, and Jey is beside himself, going a little crazy. So the next match is the ungodly pairing of Otis and King Corbin. I cannot imagine a match I would want to watch less. But thankfully, Jey feels the same way, because he walks past Otis. Blue collar working man is the name, is how his song starts. Blue collar working man. And then he comes out and he kind of like stares down Jey, and he walks down the ramp, and then Jey apparently went to the back and got a chair, and he works over Otis, like hits him in the back, and then Otis goes down. Otis is laying on his back, and and Jey is just wailing on Otis's belly. I mean, that can't feel good. I mean, I'm also a large man. Like there's a good chance there's a lot of food right underneath where you're hitting that chair. Like that could cause digestive issues. No, don't do that to Otis. What do I say? No, hit Otis as much as you want. Honestly, just the more chair shots for Otis. As a rule, if you think you've hit Otis with enough chair shots, add one more and call it done. Two more, maybe three. So we're spared from that. That crazy Jey Uso went nuts on on Otis means we don't have to watch Otis versus King Corbin. Now, one thing that I do appreciate, because they never do this, if somebody is going down to the ring and they're supposed to have a match, but they get beat up before the match starts by a third party, not the guy they were supposed to have faced, but somebody else unrelated, they never, ever tell you who that match was supposed to be against. And I appreciate that they actually allowed us to know that it was supposed to be against King Corbin, so we could be so happy that it didn't happen. So there's film later of Chad Gable, who's not on the show, except for in this little replay, of him helping Otis up the ramp. And he's wearing, I shit you not, an American Alpha jacket, like his little zip-up jacket, this little windbreaker he used to wear back in fucking NXT. I love that Chad Gable still has that. And I almost, I want to see the absurdity of him trying to mold Otis into Jason Jordan. Like trying to mold this, again, bowling ball made out of Spam, into this svelte, hyper-athletic, super quick, professional, like amateur wrestler who does amazing like belly to belly suplexes and stuff. Just trying to somehow recreate American Alpha, but with Otis, I think would be hilarious. I mean, don't do that because it would suck, because you would ruin it. But sometimes, you know, there's that scene in Dark Knight where Michael Caine says to Batman, "Some men just want to watch the world burn." That's me sometimes. Sometimes I just want to watch the world burn. If you're not going to give me good professional wrestling, like give me anarchy. That, I mean, like I want good professional wrestling, but if the only other option is bad professional wrestling, I'd like anarchy instead. So let's do that. Let's do crazy fucking off the wall shit that is going to be just a goddamn train wreck. Yeah, let's do that. That's better, because don't give me bad. Give me horrifically, hilariously bad, or good, but never give me like lazy, like, well, we didn't feel like it, bad. Don't do that. That's the worst kind. What else happened? what else happened? Okay. Oh, this. So out comes Bobby Roode and Ziggler, and they're I don't care for them individually or as a unit. And as I said before, they're the only real tag team on SmackDown right now, since Cesaro and Shinsuke aren't doing anything. It sure seems like they're the only ones who the Street Profits can lose the tag titles to right now. I mean, certainly in the future, there's an opportunity to see some Street Profits versus Usos matches, heel Usos, which I'm definitely into. But right now, sure looks like it's Ziggler and Roode. They crack jokes about Otis. They do a lot of food based puns. I like a pun as much as the next guy. I should say I like a good pun as much as the next guy, and these were not good puns. The Dolph and Roode are up, and we want the SmackDown tag title. Oh God, it's so bad. It's a terrible one. Now comes Street Profits, and somebody's eventually going to have to do a deep dive investigative report. When the Street Profits come out as part of their big Thunderdome entrance, solo cups shoot up into the sky, like, you know, like a fireball would normally, you know what I mean, or steam or something. It's solo cups, which is their deal. I know they drink from the solo cups. Remember the Scissorp conversation we had a while back. And they're all red, the Solo Cups. The Street Profits are on SmackDown, and all their gear is blue, and they're on the blue show. They make blue Solo Cups. They make them. You could buy them. You can get them from Amazon or any of your local retailers. To me, it is inexcusable that they are still shooting red Solo Cups into the air when they're on SmackDown. Like, it's just a simple thing. And my thought is that they had originally planned for the Street Profits to be on Raw for the foreseeable future. So they got a deal if they bought in bulk. And they bought 1 million red Solo Cups. And then they moved them to SmackDown. They're like, oh, crap. What do we do? Should we buy blue Solo Cups instead? And they're like, are you kidding me? We got such a great deal on the million. We're going to use up all the red ones before we start on blue. That's the only thing that makes any sense to me. Just use blue Solo Cups now. The whole fucking thing is blue. Everything is blue. Just why is that red? I don't know. They give a bad promo. So they should stop writing promos for these guys. Let them do their own thing. I don't know. I'm not well-versed in the young lingo. I don't know if there's a song where this is a lyric. It seems like it must be. But Dawkins is clowning Bobby Roode. He says it's really too bad about Bobby Roode because the only place that that he can grow facial hair is on his upper lip. Bobby Roode is currently sporting a beard, a very nice, luscious, thick, manly beard on his cheeks and his jawline, on his chin. He has a mustache now, too, but he's also got a beard. So it's weird that you would say the only place that Robert Roode can grow facial hair is on his upper lip. When the person you're looking at is Robert Roode and Robert Roode has a beard. Like, it's a weird insult. That's why I'm thinking it must be a lyric from a song. But again, I don't keep up with the lingo, so I'm not really sure. Anyway. It just struck me as funny. Man, the only place you can grow facial hair is on your upper lip. I have a beard currently. Yeah, on your upper lip. That's what I said. Great. Fantastic. The match is nothing. They keep doing the whole thing because Ford's got bad ribs from the New Day match that they beat New Day at Survivor Series. They beat New Day. New Day has beaten Hurt Business twice, but they lost to Street Profits. The Street Profits now, spoiler alert, they lose to Roode and Ziggler. So in the past week, all of if you can even include like a couple of weeks ago, because at one point the Hurt Business beat the New Day. And I know the New Day beat Roode and Ziggler as well. So the New Day beat Roode and Ziggler, but Roode and Ziggler beat the Street Profits, and the Street Profits beat the New Day, who just beat Hurt Business, but a few weeks ago the Hurt Business beat the New Day. Like, they have 50-50'd all of their tag teams across both brands. Like, everybody's got a loss to somebody and a victory over somebody else. Especially because Roode gets a schoolboy on Ford, and Ford, after the thing, they press in on Ford with a camera, and he's got these huge eyes, like he can't believe what's happened. We lost, but we don't lose. It's a non-title match, by the way. Of course it is a non-title match. Of course it's a non-title match. Of course it is. We lost? How's that possible? We lost. It's a schoolboy, dude. He took advantage of you being distracted and not realizing who the legal man was. So the proper response for a guy who's a veteran, who's a former NXT champion, former US champion, former tag champion with Dolph Ziggler, The proper response for you to do to him when he schoolboys you when you weren't looking and weren't paying attention is not, oh my God, I can't believe we lost, but you got me this time. You got me this time. That was good. That was good. I mean, he was a schoolboy. That's what I should call you. What are you, a little schoolboy? That's all you could do is a roll-up? Why don't you be a man, hit me with a freaking move, and pin me 1, 2, 3. So you got me this time. Congratulations. Congratulations. You got me with a roll-up. Good for you. Next time, it won't be so easy. Next time, if these titles are on the line, you're not going to get me with a roll-up. That is the response that you do when somebody rolls you up in a non-title match. You don't go, oh my God, we lost. Oh no, all the momentum is on their side. We're sure to lose now in an eventual rematch. Oh geez, I better bite my nails because I'm so scared. That's not how you react to the thing that just happened. If he rolls you up, then yes, he got one over on you, but it won't be so easy the next time. That's a reaction. Not, I can't believe we lost. We're definitely going to lose again. That's, I don't know what the hell that is. Don't do that. They are interviewing Daniel Bryan backstage. Blah, blah, blah. He talks about Sammy's as delusional as he's ever been in 15 years. Blah, 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 blah. Whatever. It's a really stupid interview that they did with Daniel Bryan. The only interesting part is he mentions Jey Uso. And I say it's only interesting because of what happens in a little bit. They play the whole friggin' final farewell thing for Undertaker again. Like, it's enough. It's enough. We've seen it. Thank you. Thank you, Taker. Thank you, Taker. Clap, 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 clap. You can stop showing this. Clap, 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 clap. Okay, great. So Kayla is interviewing Mysterio and Dominic and Murphy. Are you relieved that the Seth Rollins chapter of their lives is over? Ray says something about Familia. They were thankful for many things. Thankful for Dominic. This is a Thanksgiving speech. Thankful for Dominic's career taking off, his daughter turning into a mature woman, and also we're very thankful that Murphy realized what a piece of trash that Rollins really was. And then Corbin interrupts and he says, "Oh, you're all one big happy family now. One measly win over Rollins. This guy, Dominic, he sucks. And Aaliyah's got really bad taste in men because Murphy, you tried to kill this guy a few times and now you're all friends." Also, they're doing the thing like, I don't know. It's been a while since I was in the dating game. I've been married for a while and I've been with my wife for Jesus, it'll be 11 years in June. It'll be 11 years since I've first started dating my wife. We've been married for, gosh, now I'm going to be bad. It'll be 8 years. Yeah. Seventh and wedding anniversary. I'm bad at math. So it's been a while since I've been the dating game. I do remember though, dating like in high school, college, and just like hanging out with your BF or your GF, and doing the little move where like, you know, like I got my arm around you and you're kind of like half in front of me and like you'll like reach up and grab my hand and we'll do this with my hand over your thing like this. We're just hanging out at a party, just hanging out, being BF and GF. It strikes me as something that a 19-year-old like Aaliyah would do, and not something that Buddy Murphy would do. Like, I feel like if you're dating somebody and you're just like hanging out, there's no need to be like, oh, look at us, PDA, PDA. It's not even PDA. It's just like hanging out, like groping people. Like, is that necessary? It's a weird thing. They're going to call attention to this fact. Like, there's no way they're getting out of this fucking storyline without doing an on-air wedding. They're like, I was hoping we would have like a legitimate amount of dating before that would happen. I am unconvinced that we will not have another WWE wedding before the end of 2020. It's almost December. A lot of things can happen. But Lana and Lashley, who lasted 6 months, less than that, 6 months-ish, they got married, I believe, on New Year's Eve. So maybe they're going to try and go for like the 1 year anniversary of the last train wreck of a WWE wedding, and they'll do that now. It's a really uncomfortable thing to watch Murphy all up in this girl's business. Because she's a girl. Yeah, I know. She's technically legal. She's like a year out of high school. Like let's say you're a freshman in college, and this girl that you know is dating a dude who's like in his early 30s. Is that weird to you? I mean, would you want to know like how they know each other? Or so how'd you guys meet? Oh, it was this really funny story. Should I tell it or should you tell it? I'll tell it. He was trying to murder my father, and I just fell in love. That's stupid. I'm sorry. It's fucking stupid. Anyway, so yeah, he calls out Murphy, and Murphy has to be held back by people, or he's going to beat up Corbin. Later, we're going to talk about how they have a match. It's terrible. Not terrible is Sami Zayn versus Daniel Bryan. It's a great match. Really cool in-ring psychology. Good storytelling. They talk about how Sami Zayn only wins matches by count out now. And I'm like, well, that's a way of winning matches. It's a perfectly legal way of winning matches. It really is. I mean, I know I was complaining about the whole schoolboy thing, but there's a context here. The context is Sami Zayn shouldn't be allowed to defend his championship by winning matches via count out. Why not? Everybody else can. That's a stupid argument. I will say, Sami Zayn, definitely on the heel. Sami Zayn started a mobile clinic in Syria, which is where his family is from. And they have treated all kinds of illnesses and injuries in a horrible war-torn country. He has donations from WWE Universe have helped, and he has helped a lot of people. He is a genuinely good man. And he is not wrong when he says that Thanksgiving is the celebration of the genocide of the indigenous people of Americas. Because it totally is. It's a total lie, too. I'm begging anybody out there who just do a little bit of research on the whole who the Pilgrims actually were, and also what happened with the whole with Native Americans in this country, as well as his thing of, you know, we just gluttonous on that day. I talk about the Thanksgiving stuff. The deal is like Garfield. We watched a Garfield Christmas Thanksgiving special. It's available on YouTube. So it's a thumbing from my youth. Loved it. He says an amazing thing where he distills the essence of Thanksgiving down to this one line. Thanksgiving. That's the day that people celebrate having food by eating as much of it as possible. And that's very true. So yeah, he's not lying about any of that stuff. It's weird that he's doing all the same basic stuff about like factory farming is bad, which is like, yes, that's true. Factory farming is bad. We shouldn't do it. I live in a society, which is difficult. Anyway, he just doing all the same stuff that Daniel Bryan coincidentally railed against back when he was heel champion. He's pro environment. He's anti the celebrations of things that are bad. How dare he? Just funny. Not really. Makes you go, maybe more like that. The match is very, very good. There's a few very big spots. little pet peeve. I know they're not allowed to say that somebody landed on their head or somebody gets hit in the head or a move targeted the head. Always have to say the back of the neck and the way exactly that way. The back of the neck, as though it's one word. Back of the neck, not the back of the neck, back of the neck. I have a question. Where in the neck is the brain? If you had to point, Michael Cole, look at this chart of this of a person's anatomy and point to in the neck area where the brain is. Oh, is the brain not in the neck? The brain's in the head. Oh, that's weird. So how can somebody do a brain buster and the person who takes the brain buster land right on the back of the neck? Oh, right on the back of the neck. The brain buster right on the back of the neck. How is that a brain buster if he lands right on the back of the neck? And here's the deal. The whole thing with Daniel Bryan, he's got a history of head injuries. So it's even more dangerous, more devious, more dastardly of Sami Zayn to hit a brain buster on Daniel Bryan on the fucking apron. Like, bring that up. It's part of your job to, focus on the commentary is wretched. The commentary on this show in particular is wretched. It's wretched. It really is. Michael Cole is not a play-by-play analyst. He is absolutely calling balls and strikes for one team. Like he's saying, he's making horrible disparaging remarks about one half of the people. And then Corey Graves gets to argue the other side. That's just the whole thing. But there's nobody actually just like out there saying like, this is what's happening in the ring. And then you got one person saying like they're competing pundits. I don't like a three-man booth, but Michael Cole isn't being objective with his criticisms. And he also, whatever. I don't know. So eventually, there's that fucking huge brain buster. And there's a Boo Thunderbomb. Eventually, he rolls out to the ring, rolls out. Sammy does after being in the yes lock, and Daniel Bryan gives chase, and they chase him up the ramp, and the ref is counting, the count out. And eventually we see like at like 8.5, we see Sammy run down from Gorilla down the ramp and gets in the ring just before the 10. So Sammy wins by count out. I thought he wasn't allowed to do that. Well, I think it would be one thing if you had a rule where if there's a double count out or a draw for any reason, it results in an automatic rematch if there's a draw or a disqualification. Let's say that. Count outs aren't a disqualification. Count outs is a way to win. But a double count out would be an automatic rematch, which means he would have to face Daniel Bryan again. A double countout is the same thing for him as a countout victory, unless we're saying that he actually is winning more money by winning via countout, but they don't establish that ever. So he sprints down into the ring to avoid a double countout, which is basically the same result as a countout victory, i.e. he gets to keep the title. I would love that if there was a way of describing this. A count out victory gets you this much, but a pinfall victory gives you that much, which is why it's better. If things are looking at, like, if you have a record that your people are looking at where he's won this many matches by countout or disqualification, which are count as less in, like, the, I don't know, the BCS of SmackDown Intercontinental title ratings. You know what I mean? Anyway, we go to the back and we see the reason that Daniel Bryan didn't run down from the back was because Jey Uso's beating the hell out of him. And Kevin Owens has to stop him a few times. And Kevin Owens, Uso says, you know, you want something, you know what I'll be, you know what I'll be. And he leaves. And Kevin Owens must make sure that Daniel Bryan's okay. And then he follows Jey Uso. Back from the break, we see Jey Uso talking to Roman Reigns. He's like, I'm going to handle this. That's what Uso says. I'm going to handle this, Uso. Just trust me. So Kevin Owens walks up and says, like, your family drama is getting in the way of everything. Your ego is out of control. This is not your little playground. You know, for somebody who talks about how important your family is to you, you should treat them like crap. And he leaves. And you understand. Reigns turns to Uso and he says, "This man's disrespecting you. You need to take pride in how your sons look at you, because I take pride in how my sons look at me, and they can't respect you because he doesn't respect you. So go make them respect you." Owens does not look at you with fear. Go fix that, says Roman. Natalia versus Bianca Belair with Bayley on commentary. Bayley's shtick now is that Bianca cost the SmackDown women's tag, you know, traditional tag team, the match, because she didn't make it back in before the countout. But of course, Bayley had already been eliminated many minutes prior. So her grievance doesn't add up. But that's okay. She's a heel. I get it. This is a dumb little match with Natalya and Bianca. It could be good, but they're not letting Natalya be Natalya because she's supposed to be bad. So if Natalya was good and, like, was using her technical prowess, this would be actually a good match for Bianca Belair to show off what she can do. But they're not doing that. It's more about Bayley taunting Bianca from ringside. Bianca and Natalya end up on the outside. Bianca tries to punch Natalya, who's standing between her and Bayley. Natalya gets out of the way. Bianca punches Bayley. Bayley tries to get up on the apron, I think Bianca, I don't know what the hell happens. Like, yeah, oh, that's right. Bianca throws Natalya into Bayley because Bayley's on the apron. And then rolls up Natalya. Now, I don't know why you're protecting Natalya. The whole story of how she made it onto the SmackDown women's team is because she sucked. She lost a whole bunch of qualifying matches. She couldn't win any matches. So finally she won one versus fucking Tamina. Big match, Tamina. And that's how she got on the team. She sucks. So what's the difference between shoving Natalya into Bayley, Natalya bounces off, and Bianca rolls her up for the schoolgirl, or shoving Natalya into Bayley, Natalya bounces off, Bianca picks her up, puts her on her shoulders, drops her down to the KOD, 1, 2, 3. It's the same. It doesn't hurt Natalya more. And it makes Bianca look better. And if you're going to put Bianca in a feud with Bayley, which looks to be some kind of gatekeeping feud before Bianca gets to Sasha, then I think you need to present Bianca as the strongest thing possible. And winning with schoolgirl roll-ups ain't it, fam. So, Buddy Murphy versus King Corbin. It has Aaliyah and Dominic and Mysterio, Rey Mysterio out there the whole time, and they're constantly getting in Baron's way. They're constantly, like, they're not hitting him. They're not getting Betty disqualified. They're just constantly getting in his way, distracting him, not preventing him from getting from doing maneuvers he would normally do, stuff like that. Eventually, he's distracted because Dominic grabs Murphy's foot when grabs Corbin's foot when Corbin is wearing the ropes. So Corbin turns around to look at Dominic on the floor, who just cheated, and he objectively cheated. He wasn't just like being an annoyance like Aaliyah was, or, you know, being a distraction like Rey was. Dominic cheated by grabbing his foot. You're not allowed to do that because you're not in the fucking match. So Corbin turns around to look at Dominic, then turns back around to the middle of the ring, gets hit by a B trigger, one of Buddy Murphy's big knees, and then covers Corbin for the pin. But Corbin gets his foot on the rope, but Dominic pushes Corbin's foot off the rope. And the referee doesn't see that happen. The referee counts the pin. Dominic cheats twice in the span of 30 seconds to help the guy who's fucking his sister. A guy who, it should be known, tried to murder Dominic and Dominic's father, Rey, many times over the past 6 months. I hate this fucking storyline. Also, are they trying to present Buddy Murphy as a good guy here? Because what it looks like is he can't beat Baron fucking Corbin, by himself. He needs his girlfriend, his teenage girlfriend, his girlfriend's brother, and his girlfriend's dad to run interference for him so he can beat, to literally cheat on his behalf so he can beat Baron fucking Corbin, a guy who loses everything. And it appears to be, as we're supposed to be like, ah, yeah, good for you. That's right. You know what, Corbin? You deserve it. You deserve it, Corbin. That's right. That's what you get. That's what you get, Corbin, for being a meanie. You're a meanie, Corbin, so you deserve somebody ruining your matches. Three people, in fact. That's fucking stupid. Baron, to his credit, gets a microphone and says, they're all laughing at him. They're laughing at Corbin. They cheated to win and they're laughing at him. I don't understand how they could possibly be. And as he says, you're a bunch of spineless cowards. I want a rematch versus you, Buddy Murphy, and next time I'm going to be prepared. The people are talking, well, then he's going to bring backup. Sean Ross Sapp says he hopes it's going to be the Forgotten Sons. Not that one. Not that one. The other two. The other two who didn't make their fascism, their affinity for fascism, they did not make their affinity for fascism known publicly, which would, I would think, piss off some of their coworkers and make them impossible to work with. So there was one of the three Forgotten Sons who is ironically now going to be forgotten, because he apparently will not be coming back. But if they bring back Blake and Cutler to team with Corbin, that'd be fine as long as they get rid of Corbin's stupid fucking king gimmick. Now he's back to being more of a biker Corbin, and he's got these two guys running as sidekicks for him. That's perfect. That's a really good trio. That could be really good. I mean, nothing Corbin does is really good, but I still believe he can be a very good in-ring heavy type of guy, mid-card type dude. Never main event type. He's just not going to work out for him, but he's certainly still very serviceable. Maybe he says next time I'm going to be prepared, not because he's going to bring backup, but because he's going to tie up Rey and Dominic and Aaliyah and leave them in a broom closet somewhere so they can't get involved in his fucking match. WWE has no fucking idea how to build baby faces. It's not this. It's not Lana like, oh, the big lady is mean to me. Have pity on me. That's not how to build a baby face. Also not. So funny story. I was trying to murder this dude, and now I'm hooking up with his daughter, who's like 19 and a real piece of ass. And get this. They're helping me win all my matches by cheating for me. Don't you want to root for me in this hypothetical scenario? No, you don't? Oh. Yeah. No, that's not good. You can't keep up this whole Murphy and Aaliyah charade for much longer without finding a way for them to communicate to us what they have in common. What they have in common. What are their hopes and dreams together and apart? And why have they reached this accord? Why are they in love? Why do they love each other? What does Buddy love about Aaliyah? And what does Aaliyah love about Buddy? Otherwise, it's just some fucking storyline you threw together and you didn't bot to cross any of the T's or dot the I's. Those lowercase J's also in want of dots. Add some dots. So they're gonna the best thing they can do. I'm a broken record, guys, but they keep doing this. They separated Big E from the other members of the New Day and kept him on SmackDown and moved the other two guys over to Raw. So Big E apparently could play a little one-on-one with Apollo Crews doing waste paper basket basketball. That's what they're doing with him. Now, by the end of the segment, I guess they're doing some more with him, but they're still not putting him in a fucking match. Maybe by next week, maybe, fingers crossed, by next week, he'll have a match. The first one in a month or more. He hasn't done anything since he won that feud with Sheamus during the night of the draft. Right? Jesus. But Sami Zayn walks up, get the hell out of the way so I can talk with Kayla because you're in my shot. He says bad things about Apollo. Apollo walks off. Big E gets in Sami's face. He's blah, blah, blah. You built quite a house for yourself. What a foundation, except for it's a house of cards. Big E is great in this segment. He's very, very good, and all of this stuff is good. And he says, so you won. You had to win. You didn't win in 3 seconds. Well, 3 seconds would be easy. Pinning a guy for 3 seconds is easy. No, 10 seconds. That's an accomplishment. I had to keep a guy out of a ring for 10 seconds. That's hard to do. So you like 10 seconds. Okay, well, I'll give you a little handshake. So Big E then crushes Sammy's hand for 10 seconds, counting very elaborately to 10. So I'm fine if you want to give Big E a real run with the Intercontinental title, considering the one he had, God, what, almost 10 years ago? Feels like less than, I don't know, was it 10, 6, 7, 7 years ago? 7 years ago, something like that? 6 years ago? I don't know. I can't count. That was not a great Intercontinental title run. This could be one if you gave him one and allowed him to really run with it. That's fine. It doesn't seem like enough, though, to separate him. Like, everyone's like, Big E, he's going to win the Royal Rumble. Like, I honestly didn't think they were going to pull the trigger with him. And it looks like the best we're going to get is maybe an Intercontinental title run. Maybe. Maybe he has this program with Sammy and loses. I don't know. But it doesn't look promising. You separated Big E from the New Day, so Big E could stay on SmackDown and not have any matches for a month, and then finally maybe become Intercontinental title. Like, everyone was like, oh, it's okay. They're separating him from the New Day because he's going to be WWE champion by Mania. Like, are you fucking delusional? Like, that's not how they're booking him. They could come around on it, but, like, maybe. They mean they when they decided to pull the trigger on Drew McIntyre, it was fucking instantaneous. They just said, oh, now he's a babyface. Now you like him. And people fucking went along with it, even though there was no reason for it. And also, you like him so much, he's going to win the Royal Rumble, and he's going to be champion at Mania. That came out of fucking nowhere. This time last year, do you know where Drew McIntyre was? He was on Team Flair at that horrible Signs of Time show. He was a bad guy in that 5-on-5 tag match where it was Team Hogan versus Team Flair. He was a bad guy involved in that. And like weeks later, only a matter of weeks later, he was like, he came out one night and said, hey, everybody, you want to see me kick Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder's ass? And everyone was like, yes, we do. And then he did. And they were like, wow, that's great. We like you now, I guess. So I guess anything's possible. They could like decide to like ramp up the whole Big E thing in a matter of weeks, and all of a sudden he's going to be right in position. But it sure doesn't look like that from here. It sure doesn't. So they go to Cole and Graves at ringside for no reason except for Billy Kay shows up, and she's got headshots and resumes, and Billy Kay should immediately join the commentary desk. She should be there next week full time. If you're not going to let her wrestle, and believe me, you could have her wrestle. She could like run afoul of some of like Bianca Belair and have a match with her and sell great comedy stuff, and then she'll have another match a couple of months later. She doesn't have to do any of that because she's fucking gold with a mic in her hand. She's so great. That ridiculous, grating Australian accent that she's obviously overdoing. It's so good. She's so great. And I want to see more of her all the time. She says, hello. Michael Cole and Corey Graves. I feel like I'll be a natural fit here on the commentary desk because, as you can see from my resume, I have a proficiency in speaking. She is great. My Australian accent is not also great. Carmella does a backstage promo. She says the same shit. And then she does a little snap for her wine glass and doesn't show up. She snaps again, and then somebody hands her a wine glass, but then they turn the knuckles to see that she's wearing the boss ring. Oh my God, it's Sasha Banks. How did she get in here? And Sasha Banks beats up Carmella. Sasha Banks, 3 weeks ago, was on one of the biggest fucking pop culture shows in America. It was worldwide, The Mandalorian. She won her title. She defended her title against Bayley, successfully defended her title against, she beat Asuka in the match at Survivor Series. She has been on SmackDown like a total of 2.5 minutes in the past 3 weeks on SmackDown. What are you doing? What are you doing? I understand, like, everyone believes this Carmella is a stepping stone feud to something else thing, you know? Like, you're going to have a match at TLC. Okay. But like you could capitalize on her being a fucking star. The funniest fucking thing is that the only reason that she wound up on The Mandalorian is because Jon Favreau, director of Iron Man and other things, Swingers way back in the day, and the guy who's created and running Mandalorian, saw her on that YouTube show, Hot Wings or whatever the fucking thing, where they eat hot wings and do a talk show where they're eating hot wings. She saw her on that and said, wow, she's got a lot of charisma. Who is that? I got to get a hold of her. He didn't know her from wrestling. He knew her from this Hot Wings thing. And it happened to be a bonus, I guess, that she was also a professional wrestler. Like, that's it. That's the fucking irony of that. That, like, do you want your people who are working for you to be stars? Should they make themselves stars? And you're like, no, you didn't make yourself a star the way I want you to be a star. So either sit at home and do nothing, stay off TV, or ask for your release, and then we'll throw you away. Like, be a star the way we want you to be a star. We want you to be a star. Oh, cool. Can I have my own Twitch and get a whole bunch of people to follow me from there? And maybe then they'll follow me on WWE instead. No. No, you're not allowed to do that. No, we have to manage your Twitch. It's a fucking company. It's fucking bath backwards. Boy. So, main event. Jey Uso versus Kevin Owens. They beat the fuck out of each other. It's a good match. Damn good match. It's nothing. They're not reinventing the wheel. But at one point, Uso decides he's going to get DQ'd. So he hits Owens with the chair. Wails on him for a little while. Goes out to like prep the announce desk to go through the announce desk. Gets back in the ring and ends up getting stunnered. And then he gets a chair wailed on him. And Owens is yelling at Roman, who's watching the thing from in there. And Roman is watching the screen, and Heyman is watching Roman. And I thought it was a really good touch. Like, I don't know how to feel about this until I see how you feel about this, boss. But Jey... Jake's the fuck beat out of him by Owens with a chair. And Owens is yelling into the camera because he knows Reigns is watching. This is what I'm doing to him. But he says, come on out, big man. Where you at? You love your family so much. See, you don't care about this guy. Look what I'm doing to him. He just beats the hell out of him. I'm not scared of anybody. And that includes you. But there's this great moment. He's like, you think you're the head of the table? You think you're the head of the table? I'm the head of the table. I am, me. And he puts the office chair down at the head of the announce desk and sits there. And the way it was done felt to me like it was Kevin Owens in the moment thinking, this is going to be fucking cool. I'm going to do this. And he just does it. It's just so great. He sits at the head of the table and starts pounding on the table. I'm like, that's not good table manners. But I do appreciate that is what you are saying. That's a great, great thing. You think you're the head of the table? No, this is me. I'm at the head of the table, and I'm calling you out. Where are you at? Come out. Let's do this. So, obviously, this is KO and Roman. KO's got an amazing little monologue he gives to Paul Heyman during Talking Smack from this morning, where he drops the, I'm not a good guy. I'm not a bad guy. I'm the guy. The guy who's going to take the Universal title off of Roman Reigns. It's a good little promo that he gives. It's very, very well thought out. Here's what I want. Here's my pitch. Now, apparently, he's not due back until January, which is a bummer. But I saw Jimmy Uso run down to the ring during Hell in a Cell to protect his brother. He ran down to that ring and leapt into the ring to protect Jey. So he's good enough to move, and I don't need him to work a match. I don't need him to work a match. I need him to move. Basically, can he swing a chair? Can Jimmy Uso swing a chair? Because if he can, this is my pitch. Jimmy Uso has been at odds with Roman Reigns this whole time. He is more on the side of his brother than he is on Roman's side. Jey now has fully gone to the dark side. He's snapped, right? But he's still Jimmy's brother. And I would love for Kevin Owens to have some match versus something or be setting up for something next week. And out of the blue, it's Jimmy. Jimmy attacks Kevin Owens and goes to fucking town on him. Not because he's doing it for the benefit of Roman Reigns. but because he's doing it to get revenge on KO for what he did to Jay. Because KO was doing it to Jay to prove a point. Because he says in his earlier confrontation with Roman backstage, he says, you're up in this guy's head. He doesn't know what's what. So he doesn't blame Jay for the things Jay is doing to Otis and Daniel Bryan. He blames Roman because Roman has got him all twisted. So when Kevin Owens sends a message to Roman through demolishing Jay, he's misplaced all of his rage. He wants to do this to Roman, but he knows he can't, so he's doing it to Jay. But Jimmy watches KO do it to Jay and says, you can't do that to my brother, so I'm going to do this to you. And he's just doing it to protect his brother, his blood, the closest person to him in his life. Jey Uso got walloped by Kevin Owens last night. So next week, Jimmy retaliates. And when somebody asks him, are you now in league with Roman Reigns? Like, No, I'm not. I don't care about that fool. This is for Jay. I got to go find my brother. We're going to leave. We're going to get out of here. Kevin Owens can't do that to my brother. That's all it is. This is just a little revenge for what he did to my brother. But that's the first step in getting Jimmy because if Jimmy can have that in him to be able to do that on behalf of Jay, then Jay can easily influence Jimmy to turn and join him. And actually then be, it's a very easy steps to get from Jimmy protects his brother, Jay. Jay influences Jimmy to join Roman. Jimmy joins Roman. Now you get the full triumvirate. And then we can get evil Usos versus Street Profits at Mania eventually. Maybe Royal Rumble, but probably Mania. I wouldn't mind to see that. That would be really great. If Jimmy can walk, he should be on TV all the time. He doesn't need to have matches. You can even talk about how he's not cleared to wrestle. But he needs to be on TV to make this fucking thing work. He should be gently tugging at Jay to come back to the good side until eventually Jay tugs Jimmy hard enough that Jimmy joins the dark side. He can do all of that without having to have a match. And that is my pitch. I don't know what they're going to do with Otis, but it sure looks like Otis wants retribution on Jey Uso. That'll be fun, I suppose. Anyway, that was SmackDown. Remember how I said that it'll be really good when Survivor Series season is behind us? It is. It is good. We're moving on. Moving on to other things. Street Profits lost a non-title match via roll-up, so now they have a title match versus Rude and Ziggler at TLC. That's going to be a thing. Sasha, we know Sasha's going with Carmella. It appears as though we're going to get Sami Zayn versus Big E, which put the title on Big E. I have no problem with that. Don't string it out for too long, though. And Roman versus KO appears to be the direction in at the Universal title level. And I hope Jimmy gets involved sooner than later. It'll really help the storyline be even better than it already is. I'm very thankful this week for the Fightful Faithful. You guys have made this past year be pretty awesome. I am delighted with how much you guys love my stupid, unhinged rants about things that honestly don't really matter. But just shitty WWE booking makes me mad, and then you like how mad I get. It's a symbiotic relationship, like those little fish that eat scraps of meat that the sharks leave behind. I think in this analogy, I am the little fish and you are the sharks, I think. I'm not really sure. Anyway, I love you guys. Was very thankful this year for you guys being around. And here's to another year. Cheers as I drink the official beverage of Sour Graps. It's lemonade. Excuse me, Sour Power. Oh, yeah. I drink to you, Fightful Faithful. Same time on Tuesday-ish. We'll talk about Raw and how bad it is. And then we'll do this again on Sunday. It's a vicious circle. I love you guys. Everything sucks.